you had a fancy dinner, a chance meeting, and a murder. A pair of ghosts at the Lord Baltimore Hotel just want to be left alone. And after what they did in 1929, I can see why. The Low Budget Ghost Squad is in the middle of a new mystery and about to start a treasure hunt. Well, welcome to the Low Budget Ghost Squad, Season 2 at the Lord Baltimore Hotel. I'm Natalie.
My name is Allison.
And I'm Ethan.
And thanks for sticking with us for Episode 4. We are in Baltimore this season, and we've already stumbled upon a new mystery, of course. That's what we do. We go to haunted hotels, and these things just find us.
So far, the ballroom is a little out of control. We've had lights flickering, a framed photo that won't stay on the wall, and that ghost app that we have keeps going off in there. You know, the EMF reader that transcribes what a ghost is saying to you? Yeah, we're talking to a ghost with an app.
And we've seen the names Jonathan and Hannah, who we've learned are connected to this hotel. He worked here, and she was his girlfriend. Now, I don't know what her husband would say about that. Oh, but guess what? He died in this hotel.
Now, last episode ended when we saw a shadow figure in our hotel room when we were standing in the street. So we have a picture of that shadow figure, and you can see what you think it is. It's on our social media.
So, of course, we slowly walk into our hotel room when we get up there.
And, of course, we had our app out.
Hello, this is Brian, father two of these low-budget Ghost Squad members. But for the record, I just want to make sure that you understand I was on this trip, and when we got to the room, I was the first one to go into the room, even though a certain squad member wanted to be the first one.
Mom.
Yeah, Brian, I wanted to be in there first. I mean, I had to see, was it this woman ghost thing I kept seeing in the middle of the night?
So Dad walked in, and seconds later, Mom came in, finger guns out, as if that was going to do any damage at all. As if she was Charlie's Angels or something. Very entertaining, because if something were to come out, she would throw Dad in front of her like a human shield.
I checked the closet, the bathroom, but nothing. The shadow figure was gone.
And somehow we went to sleep, or at least Allison did.
Like I said in season one, sleep is my soulmate.
So the next morning, when we went downstairs, I realized my phone charger was still in the room, and my battery was already dying. And not because I'm watching YouTube, Allison and Mom.
I didn't say anything.
Anyway, I went to go get my charger. I got into the elevator, and it wouldn't go at first. And I just sat there, and I'm like, this is what happened to Mom and Dad in the earlier episode. And I went straight up to the 19th floor.
The most haunted, if you remember.
I refused to get out, no matter what. I just kept hitting the 16th floor button, over and over. But as I saw the elevator door close, I got a glimpse of the exact same shadow figure that I saw in our hallway, three floors down. But I also saw something shiny. It flashed by too. I think this thing is following me.
Now, Ethan was nervous when he came down and he told us about what had happened. Remember from a previous episode, we learned that the elevators would sometimes just go straight to the 19th floor without anyone hitting the button. And at that point, Augustus, the security guard, who we had met earlier, walked by. And he asked us, is everything okay?
We told him, yeah. I mean, I didn't really want to share what just happened to me. So I just said, yeah, and kept on moving.
But he motioned towards the elevators and asked, did it give you a little scare? The elevator company can't explain it. And then he said this. Haven't heard of it happening in a while, though. Well, not exactly like that, but he said that.
Now, I noticed Christopher, the hotel worker, standing in the bar area and motioning for us. Augustus smiled at him, nodded at us, and walked away. Now, Christopher had told us earlier that he had some things we might find interesting since we were asking about a Hannah and a Jonathan. He said he had gone to his aunt's house to get an old family photo album and scrapbook.
And he told us the hotel has this archive section that he was able to get into. You know, newspaper clippings, guest registries, and employee lists, things like that from a long time ago. We learned, according to the newspaper clipping, the husband, Robert Fielding, died of a heart attack in the Lord Baltimore in 1929, soon after the stock market crashed.
His wife Hannah was there in the room, and the article says they had been eating breakfast, and she claimed he had just fallen over.
Just fell right over, huh? Maybe just as she planned it to happen?
I mean, you know that's where my mind went immediately.
It always does, with the both of y'all.
I mean, we were right last time about the crescent.
Now, I thought it was an interesting detail that they put in the article that he had knocked over his bourbon bottle when he died, and it was just dripping onto the floor. I guess that's what one has for breakfast in 1929 when it's illegal to even have it, remember?
So it doesn't mention an autopsy, but it does go into the incredible amount of stress he was facing because his company was losing so much money. He had made his fortune in construction after the Great Fire of 1904 that we've mentioned. I mean, the city had to be rebuilt, otherwise it's just a pile of ash.
You guys, guess what? He's buried in the exact same cemetery as Edgar Allan Poe.
It's called the Westminster Hall and Burying Ground.
Isn't that the place that had the body snatchers?
Every place that old has body snatchers.
Now, this is an old cemetery, originally called Westminster Presbyterian Cemetery, and it dates back to 1786. But then in 1852, they built a church there, and some of that church was built over the graves.
Now, this is not like a poltergeist situation. You know, like you only move the headstones, not the bodies.
So they built the church on arches that were over the graves. So there are catacombs that you can go see with all these old graves in there.
But beware. According to legend, they had problems at one point with some body snatchers way back when, who would steal newly buried bodies and sell them to medical students.
I mean, it was all in the name of science.
Now, people didn't like that, and when somebody got caught doing it, allegedly the locals formed a mob, and that guy was killed. Like, bleh.
But his ghost is still said to be there. Plus, according to the stories out there, there were some people who may or may not have been dead when they were buried. That means they were buried alive.
Yeah. They were in a coma, but at the time they didn't have all the fancy equipment to figure that out. So, they'd bury them. And in some places, they would have a bell outside the grave, and the string would be inside the casket. So if they woke up and they were buried underground, they would ring the bell and the night patrolmen of the graveyard could come and dig them up.
And then one teenager is seen kneeling over her own grave with long hair and a white gown.
Like every horror movie in existence.
Now, the most famous person there is the legendary author Edgar Allan Poe, and his death is still a mystery to this day.
Now, he was missing for about 5 days and was found outside a bar. He didn't appear to be wearing his own clothes, and he was going in and out of consciousness, and allegedly was saying the name Reynolds. Now, we've heard that may have been the bartender's name, but not everyone agrees with that. And later he died at the hospital. And we still don't know why.
Now here's one theory. You see, he was found on election day. And at the time, some people would go around and get men drunk and have them go vote illegally. Sometimes they would put them in different clothes so they could vote a second time and probably a third or fourth. And maybe he just got left on the street afterward. Now, he couldn't really drink alcohol. He may have been allergic to it or something like that. So if they had gotten him drunk, that could have been a problem. Or maybe he was under the influence of something else.
But he was buried with his wife, who was also his cousin, and his aunt is there too, who I guess is his mother-in-law, which is a weird thing to say.
was a little more normal back in the 1800s, I guess.
Fast forward to 1949, and a man started going to Poe's grave every year the night before his birthday with some liquor, three roses, and he would make a toast. They called him the Poe Toaster. Now, that went on until around 2010 or 2011, I believe, but no one knew who this man was. I guess nobody ever asked him because people would sit and wait for him, but others have taken on the role since then, and some refer to them as the Faux Toasters.
But now we know that Robert Fielding was buried at that cemetery after dying of a heart attack at the Lord Baltimore Hotel.
Christopher suddenly said he had to leave, but he would let us look at everything and get it later.
Enter Clovis. Seconds later. She came over to us in her little scooter. You can hear that thing coming from a mile away, I think. She's louder than you think she'd be at 102.
So we shared with her and her granddaughter what we were looking at. Jonathan, now, who Clovis has already told us, worked in the dining room, but she says she remembers he also worked in the laundry area.
I think that is where the penthouses are now.
Yeah, they turned it all fancy. And, y'all get this, in one of those penthouses, there's a handprint that won't go away. Doesn't matter if you wash the wall or you paint over it, it just comes back. So what went on there? Back to Jonathan. Sorry we got off on a tangent there about laundry and haunted handprints.
It's what we do. It's what we live for. Sorry, Ursula from The Little Mermaid took over for a second. Continue.
Jonathan's name was Jonathan Hill, and there was an old photo of him. Quite handsome, I will say.
Can you sound any older?
Oh, yes, I can. Just give it time and wait until you hear me try to get up off the floor.
We're looking at Jonathan's picture. I asked to see it again because I thought I had seen him before.
Allison had us all go up to the ballroom level and over to that framed photo that wouldn't stay on the wall, if you remember. Now, it was from the nurses alumni group that was from the University of Maryland when they had their dinner here.
And there he was. In the background. He was off in the corner. He had been working that dinner.
So I pulled a Nancy Drew and I figured it out. Anyway, Clovis said to us, let me pull out my old lady.
Now remember, I told you all that they had met when she was here for a dinner, and it was probably that one.
Clovis had said that Hannah had been there by herself, and it makes sense because it didn't look like there was a lot of men in that room.
Yeah, Clovis remembered hearing the story years later that Hannah was a nurse when she met Robert, the husband. See, she had helped him at the hospital at some point because he had this heart condition. And I guess they fell in love. At least for a little while. Now, the dinner photo was dated May of 1929. And Robert Fielding died that year in December. Just enough time to start up an affair and decide to kill your husband.
Especially if you knew about medicines.
Now, Clovis said, at least what her mother told her years later, because it was a great scandal among the staff. See, Jonathan loved Hannah the minute he met her. He was the server at her table that night. And he got so nervous whenever he went over there, he would constantly drop things and eventually spilled water all over Hannah. Now, the other servers told everybody, and you know the gossip was going crazy. The other people at Hannah's table were horrified and lots of, I assume. But not from Hannah. She just laughed and said, it's okay. And she allegedly winked at him.
And it was all over then. And probably all over for Robert, too. Hannah was much younger than Robert. Like, much younger. And I'm guessing she fell in love with his bank account more than his personality.
Not that uncommon through the course of history, I have to say.
Clovis was looking at the picture, and her granddaughter was holding it up close so she could see it.
Like Mom does with her phone. Now, she said, I think that's Hannah. It was one of the women at one of the back tables, in all white. I mean, it looks like most of the people in that picture were dressed in white, and, you know, don't ghosts seem to wear a lot of white outfits?
But wait, we've heard of a ghost guy in a blue sports coat with shiny buttons. So, who knows what a ghost dress code is?
Anyway, we found a photo from the hotel archives that Christopher had given us, and it was wedged into a folder. It appeared to be from the night of the nurses' dinner, and it showed the moment Hannah and Jonathan were dancing in the side parlor, just as Clovis had described.
And they were smiling at each other, and they looked like really happy.
But what took me aback was Clovis's reaction to seeing that photo. She was touching it very lightly and gently. And at first I thought she was smiling, but then her lower lip began to quiver. And she pointed to a figure standing off to the side, and you could hardly see who it was. And she said, very quietly, as her 102-year-old voice cracked, "Mama." And she rested her head against her granddaughter, who had kneeled down by her side.
Oh my God.
So Allison and I are in here crying right now. Clovis wanted to leave after that, after she saw that picture. And we were all a little emotional, tearing up, just watching her reaction to seeing her mom. But she did turn to me and say, "Be careful in that ballroom. I don't think they want you in there." So at this point, whatever was going on in the ballroom, we were pretty sure was related to Jonathan and Hannah. I mean, they had died outside the hotel in a trolley accident, actually a few weeks after her husband Robert had died.
Close enough to haunt it, I think.
And if that's where they met, that's where they might haunt. We need to go back in there.
And we need to bring some cat balls.
Don't start that again. Now, if you remember from season one, these cat balls are used to show if a ghost is around.
Now, in theory, the ghost could touch or move it or whatever it wants to do with it, and it would light up. But you see, we are the low-budget ghost squad, and I didn't bother to go get any of those before we came here.
This sounds more like an underprepared ghost squad.
So, we found a pet store not that far away, and we got a few cat balls.
So, we went back into the ballroom. No one else was in there. No one else is fool enough to go into a room where ghosts don't want you. Well, except us.
Yes, except us. So after a few minutes, the overhead lights started blinking again.
But this time, I figured it out. It was Morse code.
Now, before we get to that message they were sending, let's share what happened with the cat balls, shall we?
This is not my fault. I repeat, this is not my fault, contrary to the belief of one other member of the squad. I put one of the balls on a table, and I had the video camera. And at this point, Ethan was trying to talk to Hannah and Jonathan, or whoever else is in the room.
We were getting words on the app that I didn't like, and I was asking, "Do you want us to leave?" But I called out the names Jonathan and Hannah. And that's when a cat ball went off.
I turned the video camera off by accident, trying to see what he was pointing to. Now, I will say that the cat ball had gone off when I set it down on the table, but I swear it had stopped blinking by the time Ethan saw it.
Okay, we're going to stick with that story. So, Ethan, that Morse code that you deciphered.
So I was trying to write down what I thought they were saying, but I didn't translate it right. So it first came out as demand, or so I thought, but then it started blinking faster, and then I realized whatever it was saying diamond.
Now you have my attention.
Coming up on the next Low Budget Ghost Squad.
I mean, now there's a diamond involved here.
Yeah, and Clovis knows a lot more than what she's telling, like what else she saw firsthand back in 1929 when Robert Fielding died. The Low Budget Ghost Squad is part of Spellbound Productions. Created, written, directed, produced, edited, and whatever else by yours truly. Lucinda Peterson did the awesome artwork, and thanks to Brian, Allison, and Ethan for playing along with this, because it's not as much fun to ghost hunt and solve mysteries by yourself. Thank you.
Thank you.